It's called a motion for acquittal. Such motions are made in almost every major criminal case in the United States. After the prosecution rests, but before the defense makes its case, the judge is asked by the defense, outside the presence of the jury, to find the defendant innocent. And as is almost always the case, the judge Friday denied the motion. But in a complex case such as Stanley Liggins, listening to the short arguments on both sides, as well as Judge Greaves' ruling, is a good way of refreshing your memory of where the case is now. So Suspect Convictions is providing you with these short arguments in their entirety. We return next week with our usual narrative format.
At this point, we move for judgment of acquittal. Essentially that there's insufficient evidence to send this to the jury in order to convict Mr. Williams. The reality is, and I believe that the state would acknowledge, that this is only a circumstantial case. There is no direct evidence that ties Mr. Williams to the death of Ms. Lewis. And really the big question is what that direct evidence and more concrete examples of proof are. During the entire testimony of everybody concerned with this investigation, there's been no way to explain how Mr. Liggins would have had the time or window of time or opportunity to have committed this crime, given the timing and placement of him in Rock Island, the Davenport in Rock Island, the back and forth, the time he showed up at the Glens, the times he would have been at the Hillside Inn. There's been no explanation or attempt whatsoever to clear up and allow the jury to understand that there was any opportunity for Mr. Liggins to have committed this crime. They also haven't established where this crime would have happened. There's an inference that maybe it was in the car. There's no proof that it happened at that Hillside Inn. There's nothing of all the places that Mr. Liggins was to show that the crime happened at any of them. And when you just have those two basic facts, Your Honor, it shows that the circumstantial evidence, while in one way can infer guilt, more substantially proves nothing because of the absence of the time or the absence of place for this crime to have occurred if Mr. Liggins was the one responsible. For those reasons, Your Honor, we do not believe there's sufficient evidence for this to move the jury and ask for a judgment of acquittal.
Mr.
Walton,
Ms.
Walton. Thank you, Your Honor. I disagree with Mr. Bob Baker. I believe doing evidence in the light most favorable to the state at this time. A prima facie case has been raised as to each and every issue of the crime charge. There is both circumstantial and direct evidence in this case. There is direct evidence that Mr. Williams was the last person to be seen with Jennifer pursuant to eyewitnesses. And the timing, of course, is a jury question. We would argue and will argue there was ample time for Mr. Liggins to take Jennifer, to sexually abuse her, murder her, and set her body on fire. As far as to where in Iowa there is an inference that if a body is found within the state of Iowa, the jury may infer that the murder occurred within the state of Iowa. That only makes sense that a person that a murder occurred close to where a body is found, that people generally are not going to want to drive around, especially from state to state, with a body in their vehicle. And therefore, it is reasonable to infer that the murder itself occurred within the state of Iowa, and her body was dumped and set on fire shortly thereafter. I don't think there's any issue that Jennifer died as a result of being strangled. That would have to be done with premeditation and malice aforethought. I don't think there's any issue that Jennifer was sexually abused based on the testimony of Dr. Stevens regarding the injuries to her pelvic area and her internal organs. Area and including injuries to the vagina, the bruising of the vagina. And I believe the jury question has been raised as to each and every element, and we would request the motion to deny.
Thank you. Well, obviously the court does have to make a determination whether there's been substantial evidence upon which a rational fact finder could find the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And in considering that, I have to take into account the evidence that's been presented by the state. In making that determination, I have to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, including giving the state any legitimate inferences and presumptions that may fairly and reasonably be deduced from that record evidence. I do find that there is a lot of circumstantial evidence, whether it's direct or not. There could be some evidence considered direct as well. There's evidence that Mr. Liggins was seen outside the Max liquor store where Jennifer was last seen. Clearly a jury can choose to believe Mr. Holmes or not, but they could choose to believe him. There's evidence that Mr. Liggins had approached Jennifer when he was in his car prior to that time when she was over playing with friends. I think two witnesses testified to that. He had denied that initially, but then recanted that when talking to police. There's evidence that at least one witness, if not two witnesses, saw a red foreign car in the area where Jennifer's body was found. And one witness described the distinctive nature of the headlight or the taillights. There was, I think, another witness that talked about seeing a man getting something out of a trunk in that area, or standing, I shouldn't say that, standing by the trunk with the trunk open. There was evidence that Mr. Liggins was at the Glen home and asked Jennifer to buy him gum and left shortly after she left to go buy him the gum. There are some time gaps in where he was and what he was doing that I think the state could legitimately argue gave him ample time to commit the crime. There's evidence from Brenda Adams and another woman, Anna Atkins, who testified they smelled gas coming from Pujo the day after, or a few days within the murder of Jennifer Lewis. I think Mr. Lewis or Mr. Liggins had told police that he always left the gas can in the trunk. The one witness, Ms. Atkins, testified that that gas can was in the back seat and she smelled the gas coming. Yes, he was coming from that car. And we do have Frank Rising's statement that Mr. Liggins, in his mind, confessed to this crime. Whether the jury believes that's a confession or not will be left up to them. But at this point, the court finds there is substantial evidence to have this case submitted to a jury. So the motion for judgment of the court at this point is denied.
Folks, if you're anything like me, the word style kind of makes you uncomfortable. At least it does for me. I think of fancy models walking down runways wearing clothes that I would never be caught dead in. I think of it in a way, it's something, you know, that I just don't do. I like clothes that are comfortable and fit well and are attractive. And that's why I really like this company called Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that finds and delivers clothes, shoes, and accessories to fit your body, budget, and lifestyle. Just go to stitchfix.com/suspect and tell them your sizes, what styles you like, and how much you want to spend on each item. You'll be paired with your very own personal stylist who will pick 5 items to send you right to your door. Then you will try them on, pay only for what you love, and return the rest. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. There's no subscription required. You can sign up to receive scheduled shipments or get your fix whenever you want. Stitch Fix styling fee is only $20, which is applied toward anything you keep from your first shipment. Get started now at stitchfix.com/suspect. You'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all five items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/suspect to get started today. One more time, folks. You'll absolutely love this company. Go to stitchfix.com/suspect. It's wonderful. You'll love it. I sure do.
I'm Benjamin Payne, reporter with WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm speaking with Scott Reeder, who is in Waterloo, Iowa, to cover the murder retrial of Stanley Liggins. Now, Scott, the prosecution has just rested its case, and the defense has now its turn to call witnesses to the stand. Who did they bring up today?
Well, they haven't brought witnesses forward in a live witnesses, I should say. They brought forward today a witness who has passed away, and she was a woman that said that she saw the night of the Jennifer's death someone loading up a car near that address with a large box. Now, prosecutors are very dismissive of this witness, saying, you know, she thought it was an extremely hot day. She didn't come forward for several years. It wasn't a hot day. I remember that very well. A lot of things don't add up in her testimony, but that was read into the record today. But the big thing that happened was that in every criminal trial, there's what I call almost a perfunctory motion for acquittal, essentially asking the judge before the defense makes its arguments, hey, the prosecution hasn't made their case. You know, why don't we dismiss this case altogether? And, you know, so at this point, the defense got up, made their arguments for a few minutes. The prosecution got up and countered, and then the judge ruled. Now, we all knew, including the defense, it was extraordinarily unlikely the judge would rule for an acquittal without and not let it go to the jury. But what is interesting to me was it gave a very good wrap-up of the case, and it reminded us all of what the has been presented so far. It also reminded us all of what the big open question marks are, the things that the prosecution really wasn't able to cover because they just don't have the answers to.
And how long did the judge take to decide not to dismiss the case?
She didn't even leave the room. She just, they both got up, made their arguments, and then she said, and then you could tell she'd already written out her response and just kind of read it into the record right there. You know, but it does remind us of things that, you know, are concerning. One of the things is no one knows where Jennifer died. We don't know if she died in Stanley Liggins' hotel room. We don't know if she died in his car. We don't know if she died someplace totally different than that. Frankly, we don't know if she died in Iowa or Illinois. We just know the presumption under the law is that she died in Iowa just simply because her body was found there. But it could very easily have been in Illinois. So this is questions like that come to mind. And now you can say to yourself, well, what difference does it make? Well, you know, 20 some years ago, after the first trial, Stanley Liggins was convicted of kidnapping and sexual assault and murder. Well, the Iowa Supreme Court threw out the kidnapping and the sexual assault because they said, we don't have anything that would indicate that those things happened in Iowa. It could have happened in Illinois. Could have happened in Iowa. We don't know. Now, we're going to presume that she was killed in Iowa simply because the body was found there. But we don't know. And that's one of the great mysteries of this case. No one really knows where the crime happened.
Interesting. Do you know who the defense might bring up to the stand on Monday?
You know, I think we mentioned yesterday that one of Jennifer's brothers is going to be brought forward. Her older, younger brother is coming. But it's curious because he and Jennifer only lived together till Jennifer was about 4 years old and he was about 3 years old. And you just kind of wonder what kind of testimony can somebody give about what they remember from when they were three? And what could a four-year-old say to a three-year-old that would be so striking that they would remember it 20-some years later? But we're going to hear something on that, and maybe it'll fill in the blank.
Was there anything else you want to mention about Friday's proceedings?
I just thought it was interesting that it was a nice wrap-up for where the case sits now. The prediction is that this will all probably be over with and to the jury this coming Thursday. And for all of us who are out here covering the trial or working in the trial, we're eager to see this come to an end. But none of us, and I've covered lots of trials over the years, usually, at this stage, you have a really good idea which way things are going to be going. I don't have a clue. I don't know if I have a great opinion whether the jury is going to come back with an acquittal or with a conviction. It's just a big question mark in my mind.
Cases that end in a conviction, victims and their families are often allowed to make an impact statement, a statement of record of what they had before the crime and what they were left with after. But for unsolved crimes, crimes that don't end in a conviction, or serious life-altering events that aren't crimes at all, there is nowhere for the victims or their families to speak. Impact Statement is a new podcast that talks to victims and their families about life before, during, and after a life-changing event. Impact Statement combines compelling narration with interview clips to give a clear retelling while allowing those who have been affected the most to speak. Impact Statement can be found in Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.